Welcome to a special seasonal edition of It Takes a Village, a podcast for college-bound families by Olin College of Engineering's Admission and Financial Aid team. My name is Dan.
And I'm Alia. So this is the peppermint mocha of podcast episodes, if you will.
Right now, high school seniors around the world are putting their heads down and finishing up their college applications with varying degrees of supportive prodding from their families.
So while they're busy with that, we thought we'd take a break from our typical content to think about what these families might be experiencing a year from now when their new college student comes back home for the first time.
We brought in two field experts, aka moms, to learn about the ups and downs of having their children come home from college for breaks. We are happy to have Susan Brisson and Stephanie Hill from our very own Office of Admission and Financial Aid here at Olin.
But first, let's hear from Jonathan Adler, professor of psychology at Olin College, who, in addition to being a college professor and a parent himself, specializes in identity development. Welcome, Jonathan. We're so glad to have you here today.
Oh, thanks. I'm so glad that you invited me.
So can you just speak a little bit about what, you know, traditional college-age students may be experiencing developmentally at this stage in their lives?
Obviously, late adolescence, early 20s is sort of the main show for identity development. So identity is really a lifelong task, but we really start the work on identity in adolescence. In my field, we talk about this concept of narrative identity, which is the idea that the best way to understand identity is as the story that you tell about your experiences. And it turns out that weaving together a sort of integrative story about your life is a fairly sophisticated cognitive task, and it's one that really gets going in adolescence. So for college students, identity is often a time of sort of major revision, right? They're really like laying down the first draft of their adult narrative identity, right? They got started in high school, but then there's this big moment of transition where they're often on their own for the first time, though not for everyone. And that's an opportunity to really start to ask these questions and explore who they want to be and also start to make some commitments about who they want to be.
How does one's environment impact their identity developments? And how might that impact someone who is going back and forth between multiple environments, like someone in this case going from home, from college to home and back to college like that?
Yeah, great question. So again, if we think about identity as a story, then we draw those stories about our own lives from the sort of templates of stories that are available to us in our social contexts. Right, so our family offers us a set of versions of how life stories might unfold, but students often select colleges because of the kinds of stories that they offer about how one's life might unfold. And I think Olin offers a very particular kind of narrative around what it means to get this kind of engineering education, what kinds of people you might become. And so stories that we tell about our own lives are always in this sort of dynamic dance with the stories of the cultural context that we find ourselves in. And so when we go between cultural contexts, it can be very confusing. You get used to sort of drawing from one set of stories, telling your own story to fit into that cultural context. And then when you switch context, you've got another set of stories that you're engaged with. And that builds some flexibility, right? Like that's actually a tool that's useful for people to be able to narrate their sense of self in a different way to different audiences. But it's a skill that takes some development, and it's not easy.
And there's one question that I think is really important too, which is what about the parent's identity in all this? You know, we think so much about the child going off to college, but what about the parent when they're experiencing this really significant shift in their family and their life as well?
Absolutely. Yeah, no, again, identity development is something that continues throughout the lifespan, and turning points for our children are also turning points for us as individuals. So I think for adults, especially people who are sort of experiencing the empty nest for the first time, but not just those folks, this is also a time of revision. So it's interesting, in adolescence, there's a lot of sort of tumult. We're constantly working, we're exploring, we're working on new drafts of ourselves. We're trying to lay down a first draft of narrative identity that makes sense. Once we reach midlife, we've sort of got a version of our story that works for us, but it's not that it never changes. It's that it mostly changes in these moments of discontinuity, when the coherence that we've sort of figured out about our lives gets disrupted and then also repaired, right? So this is also a moment of identity development for parents. It's a moment when their own sense of self has been disrupted and they're also doing the work of sort of finding their way back to coherence, understanding what this new chapter is going to look like in their own life story. So it's really an opportunity for parents too. And parents, like for your kids, the discomfort that you may feel actually can be the signal that this growth is happening, right? That you're actually working on something. The discomfort can be evidence that you're actually working on something. And that is the task of identity development in midlife.
I think that's a great message, and hopefully comforting to some of our parents who are maybe going through that discomfort phase for the first time.
Yeah, I think there's one other thought that I think would be useful to share in this context, which is, again, sort of targeted at the parents, which is to remember that for your college students, their own process of identity development can feel like an evolution, right? They're experiencing these changes on a day-to-day basis, and they may not have like coalesced and cohered yet, but they're working on it in little bits over time. But for you, it might feel like a revolution, right? Like they went away and they have come back in a different way. And so just remembering that for them, it's been like one step at a time, a process of development, whereas for you, experiencing it disrupted by several months can feel like, oh my gosh, what's going on here? And so that sort of evolution revolution frame, I think of as useful to remember what it's like from the other person's perspective.
And now please enjoy our conversation with Susan and Stephanie. All right. Thank you, Susan. And thank you, Stephanie, for joining us.
Oh, thanks for having us.
Thrilled to be here.
Can you just tell us a little bit about your children, their, you know, who they are a little bit, and geographically potentially where they're going to school?
Sure. I'm glad to. I have three children, and my oldest daughter is going to be 29 on her birthday. So I have had years of experience raising children. She went to a small women's college fairly close to home, as did my younger daughter, who's 23. She ironically went to the same college as her sister, despite saying very clearly from the front end she wasn't going to do that. And then I have a son who's in the middle. He's 26, and he took kind of a different route through college. He went to community college for a couple of years, then he took time off, and now he's at a public university, also, you know, probably like a 5 or 6 hour drive from home.
Awesome. Thank you. What about you, Stephanie?
I have two boys. One is currently a senior at a large public research university in the Midwest, so far away from us. And my youngest one is a freshman, so he's in his first semester. And he is at a small liberal arts school here in Massachusetts, so much closer than my older one.
Thanks for that. So I guess, what was it like when they first left for college? You know, did you notice any shifts in the family dynamic or home life when they first went away?
I think for me, it was, you know, that my firstborn leaving. And it was definitely a switch in dynamics, and just that we were a family of four and all of a sudden a family of three. I think any sort of change like that is a shift in dynamics within anyone's home. But it was, you know, we all kind of fell into our own routines. I think maybe my younger son felt a little bit like he had the microscope on him now because there wasn't somebody else there. But it wasn't, I don't ever remember it being like, oh my gosh, this is horrible. It was just a kind of like, okay, this is our next chapter and everything was fine.
What about you, Susan?
It's interesting because I remember when my oldest daughter left to go to college. I mean, maybe I'm just a really dramatic person. I don't know, but I felt like my life will never be the same again. My family will never be the same again. And where you said it's the beginning of a new chapter, I was like crying because it was the beginning. It was the ending of an old chapter. And I felt, you know, really sad about that. It was definitely a big shift in our family dynamic. My oldest daughter is a pretty big personality in the family. So I think that it made space for the others. That was good. I agree, especially my younger daughter felt like now she was under the microscope. And I don't know why my son didn't feel that. Maybe he just, I don't know. But it was a big change. We really felt, I don't know, like something was missing for a while. It was hard. It was really, really hard for me at first, I will say. Definitely. And the relationships that they have. I mean, my older daughter was like, she was a senior in high school when my son was a freshman in high school. And that was kind of a challenging dynamic for him. I think he was really relieved to have her out of the picture so he could own high school himself. And my younger daughter was still in middle school. So, you know, she was like, he could kind of be the only one there, which was good because he's really different than she is. And I think especially in our small town, people know you so well, and they know your family, and they have expectations about what you're going to be like based on your older siblings. And that can be really difficult.
Can you tell us a little bit about the first time your child came home from college? How did you prepare and communicate with your child ahead of time? What did they want to do when they were home? Were you surprised about anything? Just kind of walk us through that experience for that first time they came home from school.
Yeah. Sure. Well, I mean, it was so different with each of my three kids. So again, like when it's the oldest and it's the first one doing it, then you over-prepare and you call and you make a plan and you have it all orchestrated. And when it was my son and it was simply like a text, like, pick me up now, you know, and that was the extent of the preparation. And it was, you know, like, it was different. I mean, I'm always really accustomed to sort of driving the agenda in my family, or I was. And so that was a real departure to have to sort of step back and let somebody else dictate the agenda. I do remember that, you know, my older two were more inclined to come home and go out with friends and you know, sort of do those kinds of things. My youngest daughter, it really surprised me because when she came home, she had no interest in going anywhere or doing anything. She just really literally sat on the couch under a blanket and read a book the whole time, which is fine. Like, it does not make for conflict, but it also made me feel like, oh my gosh, should I be worried? Is there a problem? Is something gone wrong and you don't want to tell me? Has there been a crisis that I should know about? So, you know, it was different for all of them. And I think that was the hardest part was, you know, once, you know, you do it once with the oldest child and you think you know how to do it. And then the subsequent children come along and they are different and their needs are different and your reactions are different. So you have to kind of relearn it every time.
Yes. Yeah, so the first time my current senior came home, so at his freshman year, I was obviously very excited to see him. We hadn't seen him since dropped him off in August. So it was November. Couldn't wait to see him. I picked him up at the airport. And literally in the car at the airport, he was like, oh, can you drop me off at this place in Boston? My friends are getting together. So literally he got off the plane, got in my car, and then I dropped him off. And then he was with his friends and I went home alone. So, you know, I got home and my husband and my other son were like, where is he? And, that I always will remember that. I mean, at this point, you know, it's been a couple of years since that happened, but I will always remember that night. In that, like, it's just different. I think we both had different expectations, obviously, for him, and I don't blame him. He was excited to see his friends who he had not seen in a long time. You know, a lot of his friends were going to schools that were much closer to home, so they had seen each other and he hadn't. So he wanted to see his friends and I wanted to see him. And obviously, you know, those two don't mix. So that Thanksgiving, literally we saw him at Thanksgiving and that was it. It was, it was, I had heard people talk about that, but I didn't really think it was true, but it really was. I was like, wow, we're never going to see him again. But I will say each Thanksgiving, every time he came home, he was spending more and more time home. So I think it's that first Thanksgiving that they really, I mean, some kids, not all kids are the same, but that first one is like, you never see them. And then as the years go by, they end up spending more and more time at home. So I think it's, I think if you can set your expectations really low, then you can be surprised. But I think it's just kind of understanding that, you know, they want to see their friends who they haven't seen in a long time. And there's only so many days that they're home, and it's, you know, you're going to have friend time and you're going to have family time. That was interesting.
Yeah. And I would just even add to that too, that, you know, because my children are older than yours, and we've been doing this a lot longer, that sort of need to see high school friends, I just found dwindled like over like 3 or 4 years, you know, their friend, then those people were no longer their friends. Their friends were their college friends. And that shift meant that when they came home, they were much more inclined to be at home and stay at home and kind of hang out. So, you know, that part was kind of, in retrospect, like I get what you're saying, like that disappointment is so hard, you know, because you don't want to make it about you and your expectations, but you know, you can't help it. But knowing that, you know, it all kind of comes full circle.
Great. So let's talk about rules a little bit. So one thing I'm really curious about is, like, you know, you raise your child for however many years, and then they go off to college and they're semi-independent, right? They're not totally independent, but they're also living somewhere else and kind of following different rules and expectations. And then all of a sudden they come back and they're under your roof again. So can you talk to us about how did you approach rules and expectations with your child when they would come home?
Looking back, I don't think we ever had a formal conversation about it, and maybe we should have. But, you know, growing up, whether good or bad, who knows, my kids always did have a, like, you had to be home by this time. And so when they came home, not that we went right back to that, but it was more of a, you know, be back so that we know you're home and we can go to sleep. And especially if we're still, you know, if it was during the week, it was just like, you know, we have to go to work the next day, so can you come home at a reasonable time? It is, you know, I think, I'm sure both of them have been like grumbling about it. And I think what makes it hard is that every family is different. So there could be a family that says like, come home when you come home. And then there's like me saying like, I want to know you're home before I have to go to sleep, or before, you know, I've been sleeping for hours. So I think it's probably a good conversation for, you know, looking back, maybe I wish we did have that conversation. It wasn't like World War III for us because I asked them to be home, but it is, Alia, exactly like you said, kind of weird because they go into their world where there's no parent, and then all of a sudden they're like back being a teenager in high school.
Thank you. What about you, Susan?
Yeah, I mean, I think similarly, we never had like a big conversation about it, and maybe that would have been helpful. In hindsight, I can see that. I will preface this by saying that, you know, my kids were like yours, like they were not curfew breakers in high school. They were really pretty like easy, for lack of a better term, in thinking about it that way. So I was, again, really surprised when, you know, again, the first one, because it's my first time through, comes home and, you know, stays out late. And we've never had a conversation about curfew, and I have an expectation, and that is clearly not shared. So that, you know, that created some conflict. And like you, I felt like I always wanted to frame it like, it's not that I don't trust you, it's not that I'm checking up on you, but it's a courtesy. Like, if you're an adult now and you're living an adult life, the adults in this household treat one another with a certain agreed upon set of courtesies. And one of them is, you say when you're going to be home. And I have to, because I am not going to sleep like you, Stephanie. I'm not going to go to sleep if I know you're out. And I always marveled at that, because, you know, who knows what they're getting up to at college. I don't ever worry about that. That was never something that kept me awake. But as soon as you were back under my roof, I did worry, and I worried a lot.
So Speaking of families, how have you kind of balanced or worked through those family traditions that the times when they're coming home?
It's, you know, again, it's difficult to suspend your own expectations and take into account everybody else's. But I remember particularly one conversation I had to have with my older child was about how much her presence at family gatherings meant, not just to me and to her father, but really to her siblings as well, and how they really wanted to have time with her. And they wanted an opportunity to, you know, do the Christmas shopping ahead of time together, and understanding that that was, you know, that they really missed her, that they missed her a lot. And it was just as much about them wanting to see her as it was about me wanting to see her too. You know, we have not at this point had, you know, a whole lot of significant others coming to holidays. I mean, we did have a couple of, you know, interesting, like, who's this? Oh, hello. Yes, please sit down. Like, who are you? And what is your, and you can't ask, right? You can't say, so what's your relationship? So you're just like, oh, do you like mashed potatoes? Great, here you go, have some. I don't know, trying to give everybody an opportunity to do the things that they care about and to talk about it openly. I mean, that was the most important thing for us, I think.
I think for traditions for us, I think it's hard, like Susan might have mentioned, I think just over time things change and what is, yeah, you know, a fun family activity 5 years ago might not be the same thing now. I think we always have like the Christmas, which we, you know, there's 3 or 4 days where it's just our family, our extended family hanging out. And all of us kind of know that's happening. And then, you know, we try to take a week vacation in the summer. And those are kind of two expectations. And they don't even have to be expectations because I think everyone enjoys them. So we all kind of know those are coming. And then, you know, we all have our own lives. So everyone kind of goes their other ways, but we know that, mm-hmm, like that wintertime and that summertime, we do have together as a family.
Yeah, I was actually going to think of one tradition that I was just going to talk about. You know, when the kids were younger, we always used to go and cut down our Christmas tree. We'd always go to a Christmas tree farm. It's a really big deal. Like we had a ritual and we would always do it. And of course, with the kids being away at college, they don't get home until right before Christmas. And so I'll never forget, like the first year, I was determined that we were all going to go together as a family. We were all going to go. And my daughter got back, and it was late, like it was literally the 21st or 22nd of December. There are no Christmas trees available then. If you wait that long, you do not get a Christmas tree. And I learned that the hard way. I also learned that that was not what she wanted to do. Like she liked doing it, don't get me wrong, but she didn't want to have to get up early on that first morning and get in the car and drive all the way over to, you know, wherever we go to get it. Like it just, like she just wanted to sleep. So, you know, that was a big change for us.
So I guess for our last question, what we'd like to ask is, you know, what has helped you as a parent deal with these changes and these challenges? You know, knowing that maybe sometimes your expectations didn't always match up with your child's, you know, was there anything you did or anyone you talked to that was helpful to you? And Stephanie, you can go first for this.
I think, you know, we always think about our kids going to college and like, oh, they're getting an education, and I think this whole process of like coming home and everything is part of college. You know, us as parents, we typically, and I'm speaking for myself, I mean, I think you, like Susan said, you're constantly worrying about them. You're, oh my gosh, did he catch his flight? Did he get the bus? Did he, things are going to happen. I mean, fortunately, knock on wood for us, we have been very lucky. Everyone is happy and healthy and everything's been fine. But yeah, there's been some hiccups, but it's part of like learning how to be an adult and what does happen if you miss that bus from the airport or, you know, there's different kids are going to have different challenges. So like I said, my older one has to fly to school. He has to get on a bus. So he's got to learn all that. And it's great. He has, and you know, it's just part of becoming an adult and figuring out what to do when things don't work. So I think as a parent, trying to step back and be like, it's going to be okay. They're going to be fine. They're not going to be like left on a runway somewhere. So I think it's, you know, trying to know that this is just part of going to college. And it's very emotional, and it's okay to be emotional. I will say that I remember, you know, even his sophomore year, his, you know, his junior year, I get sad every time he leaves. Every time. It doesn't get easier, and I don't know why. I think the other thing is that you also can plan as much as you want to plan, and things will change. So it's like you don't know what could happen. My younger son, we were thrilled because he was going to school in state. He's actually an athlete. So we're like, we're going to be able to go watch his games. And then COVID happened. So we didn't get to see him all fall. So it's like, you can plan as much as you want to plan. You can think of it's going to be this way. And it might not be. You can't have that much control over everything. So I think just understanding that things, it's their life now. They're going to live their life. They're learning. And just kind of letting go and watching it all happen.
Wonderful. And what about you, Susan?
Well, I completely agree with everything Stephanie said. I think it's so true. And it is like, you know, when you are a parent, not to be dramatic, it is such a defining experience in your life. And it, you know, it's hard to see things change sometimes, but you have to accept it. It's for the best. I will say, it's great to talk to people and share your experiences. I always feel like you need to do that judiciously because you cannot compare your experience to other people's. I think there's real, in my life, I have, that's brought me nothing but sorrow. So it's really important to off social media. Don't think that every, because all you see are the happy stories of people, you know, getting off the plane and having flowers for their mother and you know, like all that crazy stuff. It's like, it's all staged. It's all like this curated content of people's lives. And it's really easy when you're feeling emotional to get sucked up in that. And it's really easy to listen to other people talk about their wonderful child who came home and just wanted to really just sit with us all week long and really like had so many phone calls from friends, but said, oh no, my parents really want to spend time with me. Like, that's a lie. I know that's completely a lie, right?
So
but
true.
People say that all the time. And so you just have to, like, again, kind of keep your eyes in front of you and focus on you and your family and maybe talk to some people you know and trust, but don't be crowdsourcing a lot of stuff because I think it just brings you grief, frankly.
We hope you enjoyed this conversation and we wish you a safe and happy new year.
Bye.
Can you sit for a while? He shook his head and he said with a smile, what I'd really like, Dad, is to borrow the car keys. See you later, can I have them, please? And the cat's in the cradle and the silver spoon, little boy blue and the man on the moon. When you're coming home, son, I don't know.